And away we go. Welcome back to Motor and Millennials with Anthony Lucci and Zach Rothenberger. We got a special episode being it's Christmas week here on Motor and Millennials and around the world. So we're bringing a different type of episode to you. We're going to talk strictly about Christmas trees. No, just kidding. We're going to talk about all kinds of trees, drag racing trees and Christmas trees, and give you a history and rundown of the different types of trees that are used, that have been used in drag racing over the years, and the history of the Christmas tree that a lot of us have inside our homes around this time of the year. So, we're going to kick it off. But before we do that, we're going to give you an update on our project cars. So in the last week, I got a new shifter installed on my Trans Am that was very easy to put in after wrestling with the center console. That was by Tick Performance, and it is a million times better than the stock shifter. So I can't wait to get the car out in the spring and try it out. Zach, how are you doing? And do you have an update on any of your cars for the week?
Yeah, I do. But I got to ask, is it a short throw shifter, or what's the difference in the...
About a mile shorter than the original shifter.
Oh, a mile shorter. There you go. A mile shorter to get you down quicker in the quarter mile. Got a lot. Perfect. But yeah, we have a new addition to the Motoring Millennial family from a vehicle perspective. And it's another one of those LS based engine, you know, type of vehicles. That's what we love here. I got a 2017 GMC Sierra 1500 SLE. It's got the 5.3 L83 engine in it, which I'm thrilled about. I think it has what Lucci, 355 horsepower, 380 foot pounds of torque
on normal fuel, and then I think that gets bumped up once you use E85.
That's right. Yeah, because it is flex fuel, so I'm going to look to dabble into that here. Hopefully in the near future. It's a little hard to find in our area, so you got to do a little road trip to get it.
That's a great engine, though. Great for towing.
Oh yeah, it is. Yeah, so that's gonna be the truck we're gonna use to tow the 94 Camaro to the track next year, and looking to do some improvements to the truck at some point in the near future. Just kind of doing some aesthetic stuff right now. Did some running boards.
What is the color of that truck, Zach? It's a beauty. So what?
Yeah, it's crimson red tint coat. So yeah. It's similar to like Alabama, you know, Crimson Tide red a little bit. So yeah, first thing I did, you know, like a psycho, was I clay barred it and buffed it and waxed it. So it's took care of it. We took care of it, you know.
Everybody needs a truck in their life.
Oh yeah, I love it. I'm really pleased with it, and I can't wait for the adventures to come. We'll be towing a lot of cars with it, Lucci, that's for sure.
Yeah. Look, we expect to be at the racetrack the majority of all of 2021.
That's the plan. But I got to ask, so we were talking about trees as the topic. Are you a real tree or are you a fake tree guy?
So I am a real tree guy, except this year.
Except this year.
Okay. Yeah, I moved into a new house this year, and we have a, my girlfriend's brother actually gave us a fake tree, but it looks pretty real. And the nice thing is you don't have to clean up any of the needles. But but previously, like growing up, it was always, you know, a real tree. We had an 81 Buick LeSabre. Zach probably remembers. I drove it in high school. It's called the Hoopty.
That's right.
And one time we put a tree in it that was on top of it that was so big, it was like way too much for the tree stand to handle. And I was decorating the tree sitting on the couch, and I actually looked up and started leaning towards me, and I got trapped under the tree because it fell on me.
Oh no. That's not good.
But now, what about you? Are you a real tree or a fake tree guy?
So we did real tree pretty much my whole life. We did a fake tree maybe 3 or 4 years, but we're back to real. So the fake tree is nice because there's no cleanup or maintenance or anything, but you know, the experience of picking out the tree, the real tree, cutting it down and all that good stuff is pretty cool and adds to the Christmas memories sure. So we have a great episode lined up. And before we dive deeper into the trees, we're going to do a little recap of our last episode from last week. We interviewed Bill Rothermel. And for those who don't know, Bill Rothermel is the master of ceremonies for a numerous amount, too many to list, concourse, d'elegance shows, car shows, across the country, you know, from Las Vegas, Washington State, all the way to here in Pennsylvania, down to Florida, just a bunch. He's an automotive journalist for a lot of notable publications, writes a lot of great articles and tells a lot of great stories from his experiences in the auto community. And he's also deeply involved at the AACA Museum in Hershey, Pennsylvania. And Lucci and I will definitely be there to check it out. And I highly recommend anyone who hasn't heard of it, check out their website. The link is in our previous episode with that interview with Bill. So be sure to check it out.
Yeah, definitely listen to that. There's a lot of great information that I know Zach, me and you, Zach, after the interview, we were talking, just kind of blown away with how much stuff we didn't know at all about concourse car shows. Like, just didn't have a clue. We learned so much.
Yeah, no, we really did. It was a really good time. Bill's a great guy, so definitely be sure to check it out.
Yep. All right, so let's talk about trees, since it is the week going into Christmas in this crazy year 2020. But the nice thing is we're still keeping our traditions alive, no matter how you're doing them, even if they're on a smaller scale. But a lot of times, talk about a tree, you might say that to someone who doesn't know much about drag racing. No, there's a, yeah, it's like, yeah, you know, well, I didn't do well on the tree. And they're like, what are you talking about? It's like, well, the tree is crucial to drag racing, right, Zach?
Oh yeah, it is. I mean, that you can win and you can lose races, you know, on the tree, you know, whether it's a red light or you're just late on the reaction time or you're good on the reaction time. It can be a huge advantage or disadvantage in your race.
And Zach, I don't know if it was you or someone we might've interviewed, but I think the tree kind of ties into this. Someone said that the majority of the times, a lot of times you can win, or maybe it was with win or lose a race right at the starting line very easily.
Oh yeah. I mean, if you have a perfect light or if your opponent has a perfect light and the other person has a 20, I mean, that's 200ths advantage right there, or disadvantage, depending on what side you're on, which, you know, 200ths advantage on the starting line from a reaction time perspective could roughly be, you know, a quarter of a length of a car, which not many people realize that split second in time on the reaction time results to a significant advantage down the finish line, especially in eighth mile where the track is shorter and it comes up a lot quicker. So
right.
It's vital. And that's why people practice. We used to have a practice tree at our house, a full size tree, and we would be hitting the practice tree. And a lot of racers do this numerous times a day, you know.
Right. The only way to get better is practice.
Yeah, that's exactly right. But
I guess let's break it down for let's break it down for the listeners. How did the tree originally start? Like, when was the first time, or I guess prior to the tree being on the starting line, how did they start races?
Yeah, so with the NHRA, you know, starting in the early 50s, it's actually pretty crazy to think that flagging races was how they used to start a drag race from the 50s all the way up until 1963, when the actual NHRA tree was introduced. And funny enough, it wasn't actually called the tree at first. It was called the countdown starter. Pretty boring compared to the tree. But yeah, so they went all from flagging to an actual tree setup where they had lights, you know, coming down, obviously. And that version, the very first version of the tree for drag racing, actually had 5 amber lights, a red light and a green light. There was actually,
wow, so you're probably sitting there for a while before you finally get the green.
Yeah. So, I mean, I thought racing with 3 lights was tough. And then can you imagine with 5, where you're really trying to focus for that much longer and be patient. And, you know, you see the lights coming down. And at that point in time in 1963, there actually wasn't a pre-stage or a stage bowl. They just had 1 beam across. That was just the starting line. There was no, you know, auto start or pre-stage, stage, all that. No staging duels, long story short, back in those days.
Wow. So there was, it was only started with the amber lights, and then you had the green, of course. And then, at the very bottom you had red in case you went prior to, the light going green, right?
Yeah. And those lights were, they were incandescent light bulbs. Right. So they had a flash, and especially at nighttime, there'd be a really big glare, you know, when they lit up.
Slower to come on.
What's that?
They're slower to come on than like a new modern LED.
Yeah, with an LED, like on the modern tree, it's just on, fully on right away. Whereas the incandescent, it's like you see it slowly come on. There's a flash, then it slowly come off. And it's like you can really pick and choose, but you have to be super focused. You really have to pick and choose where you would want to leave as far as the tree is concerned to get your perfect reaction time.
So then they added the pre-stage and the stage at the very top.
Yeah, 1964.
So they added that pretty quickly.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think it was 1 year and they probably realized like, okay, we need a more formal system to, you know, get the cars ready and staged properly and things like that, which I think we can all agree was a good move.
Right. And we're still using it today.
Yeah, no, exactly right. And at that point in time, there was no such thing as a pro tree, whereas now you see the professional NHRA racers and some sportsman classes use a pro tree where all three bulbs come on at the same time. They actually were using a full tree where every light bulb would light up. And remember, all five light bulbs, one at a time, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, you know. And 1970 is when they went from the full tree to the actual pro tree for those professional, you know, and NHRA classes.
Okay.
So it took NHRA about 20 years to come up with a pro tree, which right. is something that I always thought was just ingrained in history since the 50s. But
yeah, I thought so too, with like the top fueled dragsters and everything, that they were always on a pro tree, but I guess not. They probably sitting at the light, and then they probably realized, hey, these cars are burning more fuel sitting at the light here. And they're also, the engines are getting hotter because a lot of them don't have coolant in them. So they probably figured, let's get them off the line.
Yeah, that's a great point, because I mean, think about it. If you're foot braking, or if you're on a trans brake or what have you, and you're, you know, your converter is getting hot, your transmission's getting hot, so it's a lot more wear and tear with five bulbs versus three.
And it's also extremely more challenging because you don't have that. I mean, say you're asleep at the tree and you see you miss the first amber light come on a full tree. Well, you still got the second and third to react. Mm. If you miss, I mean, when all those bulbs come on at one time, you're asleep, you're losing the race.
Oh yeah. No, exactly right. Yeah. Like you're done. That's why you have to be really on edge and, you know, ready to go. So talking about the five amber bulbs in 1986 is when they went from five down to three instead of the five. And it's kind of interesting. And I just thought they would do that for the reasons that we just talked about, with wear and tear on cars, you know, right. things like that. But one of the reasons was because of pro stock hood development, because at that point in time, they started to have taller hood scoops. You know, we've seen some pretty radical hood scoops here in 2020, but back in 1986 is when they really started to develop those out. So the drivers weren't able to see the bulbs as clearly. So NHRA adapted
at that point.
Yeah, NHRA adjusted and kind of adapted to the trends and said, all right, we're going to go with three, you know, right. for multiple reasons. But that was an interesting one that really, really stood out to me.
Wow, that's awesome. I didn't know that at all. So that's why. Yeah, and I'm sure it also made it more competitive too. I mean, just and they, like you said, they had to accommodate for all the different classes that were coming up. It's not everyone was in a dragster, you know, with funny car, you know, or whatever, or normal street car, you know. So like you said, guys with the, especially if you're on in the left lane and you're looking over to the right and you have a huge blower or hood scoop right in your vision. I mean, how can you see the bottom bulbs?
Right. Exactly. So it's kind of a way to make it a little bit more fair and even across the board from a starting line vision perspective, which is good. It's also, you know, safe as well. You want to have visibility of what you're trying to do.
Yeah, Zach, while we're talking about, and is just, what's your favorite lane to be in?
I don't believe in having a favorite lane, honestly. I really don't, because, and I'll go on a tangent here for a little bit. So when I race, I like to go time shot in each lane, right lane, left lane. So that way I have information about each lane, how they're running that day. And I like to look at it from both angles. So that way, you know, I'm flexible and I'm adaptable. So say if I wanted the right lane, but if I lose lane choice and I have to go to the left lane, right. I have experience running the left lane that day. So I have some information. I have my vision. I'm used to seeing it from that angle. It's not like a shock to my system. There's a lot of racers that, and I don't, I get it, but I don't. They will run all their passes in the right lane. They run every run in the right lane. So, but the problem with that is if you lose lane choice and you're thrown into the left lane, it's technically, you're like out of your comfort zone. Like, so why put yourself in that position, you know? So
no, that's a great point. I actually that's something to keep in mind anytime you do time trials, is to alternate lanes. So that way you just become comfortable with both of them equally. It's like driving first time you drive a bigger vehicle for the first time, right? It takes a long time. Not that long, but after you do it a little bit, you get used to, you can see how close you are to objects and stuff. It's the same thing. Is the more you do it in both lanes, you're just going to be more comfortable with it. And it's not going to, if you get thrown in the left lane, because like you said, you lost lane choice, who cares? You can still make a great pass.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I know, years ago, Maple Grove, and I think it still is this way, maybe the right lane, both lanes were great, but the left lane was like a smidge faster than the right lane. Yeah. So I don't know. Well, I don't know the reasons exactly why, but each lane is just different. You know, the sun hits that lane differently. You know, the wind, depending on what wind, could affect what lane you're closer to a crosswind on this side versus the other. There's a lot of different variables. So I'm a firm believer of just getting information on both lanes and being more adaptable and flexible instead of just being a one lane racer, which there's a lot of people out there that are one lane racers. For better or worse, not knocking it. I just wasn't a fan of it. But back to the tree. So those incandescent, so everything stayed that, like we talked about, stayed the same until 2003 when the LED bulbs took over instead of using incandescent light bulbs. So, which for me, I mean, the LEDs, it's on. There's less flash, whereas an incandescent bulb, if you raced at nighttime, it was a significant flash. And typically at night, you would see those a lot quicker, which could lead to red lights when you're racing at night. Whereas LED, you do see a little quicker, but not as much as an incandescent. So I just think it's more, LED is just the newest technology, more reliable. It's just better.
Look. Now they even have them in the, for the stage, the pre-stage and staging on some of the trees too, which are not, I know not all drag strips have it. I know the NHRA uses it, but,
yeah, it's only for the NHRA events. So like Maple Grove, for example, uses the regular pre-stage and stage bulbs for like their weekly races. But when the professional race is there, it's the oval, the blue oval, you know, where you fill the top and the bottom, or circle, whatever.
Yeah, and they're pretty geometry. Far. You can definitely see them really well.
Yeah, you can. I mean, it's just a nice crisp look. Yeah, whether it's a cloudy day, sunny day, you're at night, early in the morning. Yeah. You know, what have you. So it's good.
It'll be interesting to see if local tracks start adopting that over the next, you know, so many years.
It's possible. I mean, that was really the biggest change. The last recent change for the tree was 17 years ago, 2003. Right. So we'll see. I mean, I don't really know where you would go from here, but hey, we'll see, you know?
Yeah. I don't know what else they can do. I mean, cause once you stage, it starts that, yeah, the time and equipment for when you do leave the line. And that factors in your reaction time and all everything. Your starts your clock, so you get your elapsed time when you get down to the end of the track. And yeah, I mean it's a pretty sophisticated system when you actually think about it. It's very simple, but whoever, you know, the design of it is pretty brilliant.
Oh yeah, and you know, and then you have like the whole auto start system where you have seven. Once the person stages, you have 7 seconds to get in and stage, or else you get timed out. Right. Which is good from a competitive perspective. It makes things a little bit more fair, so you don't leave someone hanging for too long when you're trying to stage.
Does that apply to all races, or is that mainly just like points races? So
that's every race that's on. Just so that like if someone's staged, you're not going to let them overheat or anything, and it helps the program, whether it's a test and tune or whatever. It just helps the program move, and you're not slow. You know, taking too much time to get the race done. So. And then I know recently they also made the change that before in a bracket race, if you were the slower car and, if you red lit, you lost just because you red lit first. Whereas now they changed it to it's, if both cars red light, whether you're the slowest or the fastest, whoever red lit, the worst.
Right.
They recently changed that.
Right.
So which I think is fair.
To perfect zero. Right. Then you win the race.
Right. Yeah, it just makes it more fair. So if, you know, just right. because I have a slower car and I go red, but you're faster and you go red more than me. It's not really fair that I would lose just because I have a slower car technically. So, but speaking of more tree history, we're going to talk about the actual Christmas tree now.
Yeah. So they have a history of their own. Way before Christianity started, a lot of people actually used to hang evergreens over their doorways and put them like on the windowsills, where you still see a lot of wreaths and decorations today, to keep away witches, ghosts, and illness. So, because it stayed green throughout the entire year, right? So it was in like a hope of spring is still coming. But Germans were actually credited with the first Christmas trees in the 16th century. Now, oddly enough, the United States, America, did not really adopt Christmas trees until pretty recent in the span of time here. In the 1830s, Germans who settled in Pennsylvania actually brought Christmas trees and started decorating them in their houses, but that was viewed as a bad omen. So that that actually got scratched for a while, and then in the late 1800s and early 1900s, it started becoming a lot more popular in America. And then now we all know that there's a large Christmas trees in a lot of the big cities, like Rockefeller Center. First Christmas tree there was in 1948. So the Christmas tree itself, and we have, you know, we all decorate them in our houses now and put lights on them, but you know, that has grown a lot over the last 100 years too. So, I mean, just like the drag racing tree has evolved, you know, so has the Christmas tree, in America here, at least for sure.
That's interesting. Cause that's something that to me, it's like, you think Christmas tree, I think of like, the back in time, like the Pilgrims and Indians, like to me, that would be like something that always existed, like with the theme of Thanksgiving, Christmas with the tree. It's just,
yeah, you would think it would be like for the last, 2000 years, right?
You would think, but, apparently not. So that's really interesting. I got to ask, so we talk about fake trees versus real trees. What are your thoughts on people who use like a white Christmas tree? Like they're fake, but it's like white or it's like a different color than normal.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not my thing. I mean, I like the evergreen look. I mean, I guess it's as the ones that are completely white, I don't like at all because mm-hmm. I just don't think they're realistic, right? Like the ones that are like green and looks like it has the snow covering on it. Like that's cool, but it's got to be in the right house. Like you got to have the right kind of room that it goes with, and it's just like on a car, like you wouldn't put certain color decals on a certain color car because it just wouldn't drive together. Right. So I guess it depends on the room. What about you?
Yeah, no, I'm with you. Same exact thing, but the typical green. One other question I had regarding trees for you are, what do you put on top? Is it a star? Is it a Santa Claus? What is it? Is it a wheel? Is it a tire? Or like a piston and rod combination? What do we got?
That's a good idea. I like that one.
That's what it should be if you ask me.
Yeah, no, it's actually a cam sprocket.
Ooh, I like that. There you go.
No, but actually my tree doesn't have a star on it at all right now. I haven't gotten to that yet.
Oh boy. All right. Well, maybe the rod and piston could be a first this year for you.
Yeah. Yeah. I might have to get, I'm going to dig into the garage. I'll put some kind of mechanical part up there and, wait for someone to notice that it's up there. How about you? What do you usually put up on the top?
We just got a Santa Claus, a nice fat Santa Claus we put on top, Yeah. So, but
you get this, Zach. A lot of people probably think like evergreen trees only grow in like, colder climates or in the mountains, right? Mm. That's not true. They actually grow in all 50 states, including Alaska and Hawaii. So if you go down to Hawaii and you want to celebrate Christmas down there and you want to cut down a Christmas tree, you're able to do so.
Mm. That's interesting. I never would have thought that with the climate there and everything. That's
yeah.
Good to know. Good to know. So anyone who likes to vacation and do a little stay away for Christmas. Yeah. Hawaii's got you covered. Exactly. So one last topic before we send you off here. So what are you looking for under the Christmas tree this year, Lucci? Are we looking for horsepower, torque? What we got?
Oh, man. Let's see. Long tube headers.
Okay. Can't go wrong with some long tube headers.
Rebuilt T56 transmission would be nice with a monster clutch package.
Mm, there you go.
And you know what else would be cool is what you said you had before, a portatree. Just to practice a lot. I think that would definitely be something cool to definitely have. And you get a lot of use out of it. But yeah, I don't know, any kind of car parts or even detailing products make me happy because you have to buy it all the time, right? But you know, sometimes the stuff that you use, I always like gifts that you can utilize, right? Not something that's just going to sit on a desk or something. Right? It's like, what's the point?
Yeah.
No, so completely agree. What are you looking for? Are you looking for a new set of tires or heads or?
I'm always searching for horsepower. So, you know how it is. So I mean, hey, you know, it's kind of a pipe dream for me to put cylinder heads on my, my Camaro, but I think for the time being, I'm just going to let it be and, enjoy it. But I think, you know, a set of cylinder heads would be nice. Some ported, polished, and maybe some, Texas Speed guys, you know,
you know, for eventual use. Aaron's always watching. So as long as you're good,
I think I've been nice. I mean, 2020 has been naughty, but I think I've been nice. Yeah. So.
No, it's funny. We'll talk more about my pizza truck build down the road, but I actually am probably the one person who doesn't mind getting coal for Christmas because I burn coal in my pizza oven. So anyone who wants to send me coal for Christmas, I'll gladly accept it and be very happy.
There you go. Exactly. Yeah. And speaking of your food truck build, to any listeners out there, check out Lucci Slices on Instagram and Facebook, right?
Yes. Yeah. Thank you. Thanks for the shout out, Zach. Yeah. Lucci Slices. Like I said, we'll be bringing a lot more content about that, in 2021 for sure. But yeah, I mean, I think we learned a lot about the history of the Christmas tree itself and the drag racing tree. And, yes, ultimately if you end up red lighting, you're getting coal for Christmas, right?
That's right. That's right. That's not the nice thing to do. You can't red light.
Here's the thing, Zach. Would you rather red light or be like super, super late on a tree?
I'd rather be late because there's some tactics you could do at the finish line to still give yourself a shot to win.
Right, because you're not giving up the race because you never know what's going to happen to that other driver. They could break something, right, or whatever might happen to their vehicle. Until you get to the finish line, it's still a race. And if you red light, your chances are pretty much done.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's two ends of the track. There's the starting line, which is huge, and then the finish line, which is obviously the ultimate decider of who wins or who loses. So, especially with bracket racing, even if you're late, the other guy could still break out. You know, things like that, or like you said, their car could break. You know, a lot of things can happen. So, right. Definitely would choose the latter there. But yeah, so that kind of concludes our history of the regular Christmas tree and history of the NHRA tree, which was originally called the Countdown Starter, we found out. So we'd like to wish everybody a happy holiday, Merry Christmas, a safe holiday, safe Christmas, and hope everyone stays healthy and has a great time. Again, be sure to check us out on Instagram and Facebook and YouTube at Motoring Millennials, and be sure to stay tuned for some great content moving forward.
Keep on motoring. Hit it.